When we think of heroes, we often picture those who win great battles or achieve renown in the outer world. But Theosophy invites us to look deeper. It teaches that the greatest battle we face is within ourselves, and that the true hero is one who, through quiet persistence, begins to conquer the lower self and live from the higher. This inner struggle is not dramatic in appearance, but it is profound in its effects. Each time we choose clarity over confusion, compassion over selfishness, truth over comfort, we take another step along the path. This is heroism, which is not measured in applause, but in self-mastery and service to others. Theosophy tells us that the soul's journey spans many lives, and that each act of inner victory builds a foundation, not only for personal growth, but for humanity's progress as a whole. The masters of wisdom who once stood where we now stand show us that this inner transformation is not only possible, but that it begins with effort right here, right now. So this morning, as we explore these ideas together, let us remember the call to heroism does not wait for special conditions. It speaks in the ordinary moments, making the drudgery divine, as B.P. Wadia might say, in daily choices, in how we meet our karma and how we serve. To be the hero of one's own life is to commit quietly and steadily to becoming a living expression of the higher self. We speak so often of heroes in our society, mythologized, those who slay dragons, climb mountains, or command the admiration of multitudes. But remember this: the highest form of heroism does not lie in triumph over the outer world, nor in medals won or names carved in stone. The true battleground lies within your own heart. And the most noble conquest is that of the lower self by the higher. This, the ancient wisdom religion has ever taught. HPB gave it voice in our modern tongue. The mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer. This is no mere metaphor. In the voice of the silence, she pointed clearly to this inner war, where the warrior must fight without witnesses, often without praise, but always with the possibility of awakening the divine within. Each of us stands as a dual being. There is in us the higher self, immortal, compassionate, divine in essence, and there is the lower self, shaped by desire, fear, memory, illusion. To be the hero of your own life means to turn again and again toward the higher, even when the lower calls with the louder voice. It is not a single act of courage, but a thousand small victories over anger, self-indulgence, over doubt, over the comfort of ignorance. Mr. Judge wrote of this path not as a metaphor, but as a lived reality. He knew that progress is not made in grand gestures, but in quiet persistence. The trials you face are not arbitrary punishments, as they are the unfolding effects of causes set in motion often long ago. Your karma is your teacher, your sculptor, your mirror. To meet it with openness, to learn from it without complaint or despair, this is heroism. Courage is needed, but not the fleeting courage of impulse. What is required is the steady courage to persevere when the path feels empty, when your efforts seem unseen. You must walk on, not for praise, but for principle. Each thought mastered, each passion stilled, each selfish impulse transformed into service, these are the marks of the true warrior soul. Mr. Crosby, who labored to make these teachings practical for earnest seekers, often reminded students that thought itself shapes destiny. As the mind is the first battlefield, the control of thought, not repression, but intelligent guidance, is the training ground for true mastery. You must learn to stand watch at the gates of your own mind. But understand this clearly. The inner conquest is not a selfish pursuit. You do not struggle merely to save your own soul, as every step taken upward by one soul becomes a light for others. As you overcome the narrow walls of personality, you gain the strength to truly serve, not in sentiment, but in action. Only the soul that has tasted some freedom can help to free others. To be the hero of your own life is to begin a sacred work, the perfection of the human vehicle so that it may reflect the divine. This is the path all masters have walked, as they are not remote gods, but elder brothers who have passed through the same fires that now test you. The difference is not one of nature, but of effort sustained through countless lives. You might ask, can I really reach that level? You already are on the way. The seed of that same power lies within you. The Mahatmas do not stand above you, just ahead of you. You're not called to become what you are not. You are called to remember and unfold what you already carry in silence. So let this be your understanding of heroism. Not calamity, but inner clarity. Not dominance, but self-mastery. Not escape, but responsibility. Not seeking admiration, but offering yourself in service. The battlefield is your own consciousness. The weapon is discernment. The shield, perseverance. The prize is not power over others, but unity with all. And so the world waits. It does not need more followers of fashion, nor mere repeaters of inherited belief. It needs inner heroes, those who quietly conquer themselves and radiate a force of calm, compassion, and truth into the world around them. William Q. Judge, in his approach to theosophy, constantly pointed the way for the burgeoning hero. He knew that this journey involved trials, tests of character and resolve, emphasizing the necessity of action guided by wisdom. The trials you face in your life, challenges in relationships, difficulties in work, inner struggles with fear, anger, or doubt, they don't represent random misfortunes. They arise as the result of the great law of karma, as we mentioned before. Mr. Judge taught that understanding karma empowers you to meet those trials not as passive victims, but as active participants, learning from experience, making conscious choices. Every challenge offers an opportunity for growth. Mr. Crosby, who founded the United Lodge of Theosophists, in order to perpetuate the straight line teachings, strongly reinforced this emphasis on the individual student as the locus of the work. The ULT Declaration itself, with its call for independent devotion and the aim to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others, describes the hero's task. The ULT structure, without external hierarchy or officers, forces the responsibility for progress squarely upon the individual student, compelling you, in effect, to be your own guide, your own authority, guided by the teachings. Your own hero, Mr. Crosby. He knew that reliance on external authority weakens the very muscle of self-reliance, essential for the heroic journey within. In Universal Theosophy, he said, "The causes that each one sets in motion determine the path that one must follow. This might be called destiny." If we understand that it is a destiny of our own creation, being created by us, It can be sustained by us or changed by us. If we do not like the destiny that befalls us, the effects that surround us, the conditions that encompass us, all we have to do is set in motion such causes as will produce other and more desirable effects. But we have to do it. No one else can do it for us. No one holds us back. No one propels us forward. It's from Universal Theosophy, page 15. So, where does the hero find the strength for the struggle? The fundamentals provide the answer. The first proposition reminds us of our inherent nature. You are a spark of the absolute. The power to face any trial, the potential for wisdom and compassion lies dormant within you. You do not need to seek power externally, as you must unfold the divine potential you already possess. This knowledge forms the hero's ultimate assurance, and the second proposition's emphasis on cycles gives the hero perspective. Recognize that periods of darkness follow periods of light. Setbacks, difficulties constitute part of the cyclical rhythm of our evolution. Persistence and endurance through these phases build true heroic character. And the third proposition, the identity of all souls, provides the hero's deepest motivation and reveals the true scope of the battlefield, the struggle against separateness. Against the illusion of the isolated self constitutes a core part of the hero's trial. Realizing universal brotherhood means recognizing fellow heroes on their own difficult journeys. Your victory over the lower self contributes to the upliftment of the whole, and your service to others exists as service to the greater universal self, of which you form an inseparable part. So, being the hero of your own life demands conscious effort. It involves exercising discernment to distinguish the voice of the higher self from the clamor of the lower-minded desires, practicing self-control, reining the impulse of nature, which often leads the hero into difficulty, engaging in selfless service, dedicating your energies not to personal gain, but to the welfare of others, aligning your actions with the compassion of the higher self and the masters, maintaining diligent study of the principles, using the light of the teachings to illuminate the path ahead, just as Mr. Crosby and Mr. Judge tirelessly advocated. So, my friends, the path of the theosophical student is the hero's path. When done correctly, it asks you to take responsibility for your own evolution, to battle the inner foes of egoism and illusion, to rely upon the divine strength within, and to strive for conscious union with the higher self, ultimately realizing your identity with the all. Your life's journey represents your unique opportunity for heroism. The wisdom you need resides within you. The field of action exists before you, and the power to triumph resides in your will to align with the highest principles you perceive. Be the hero of that journey.
Thank you. So we think we have the battlefield, the manuals, the pitfalls, and the prize laid before us. So in our own lives, we certainly have faced these conditions. So we sure you have many questions and comments based on your own experiences and understanding of the philosophy and its practical application. So let's start with some of those. Any questions or comments? Okay, AM, question?
Well, it seems pretty lofty, almost theatrical. How do we tell somebody in the midst of a crippling addiction to be the hero of their own life?
How do we tell somebody in the middle of an addiction to be the hero of their own life? Because the person struggling with that does not feel so much like the hero, but more like the captive and the prisoner. And the bars there are as real as any iron cage or prison cell. But we are told that even in the prison, one is free to think the way they wish. We know some of the greatest heroic examples we have in our more recent times are individuals who spent a good portion of time in prison behind bars. And nevertheless, they were able to maintain their freedom of thought and influence from within those conditions. So, what do you think on this issue? How do you tell yourself when you feel addicted to something physical or psychological? How do you tell yourself to get out of it? And how would you begin to use that knowledge to help others? Yes, Theosophy Hall.
Well, it would seem that this idea of being your own hero is for the individual during a cycle in his life where he sees it, recognizes it, and goes for it to learn as much as he can. Now, if we're talking about someone who is in a really bad way, well, that's not the time to pull out the secret doctrine. But it is time to reflect, maybe to talk to someone about the ideas of theosophy so they can accept where they are and give them hope for the future. But everyone has a time in their life when they're ready, when the cycle is here to grab it. And we all have times in our lives when no, we can't quite go that far, but there's always opportunity within the philosophy to help us accept our conditions.
Yes, we're reminded that about when you spoke that way, the comment was brought up, that probably one of the classic examples we have the hero and the hero's journey in our literature is that story of Don Quixote. Yes, he was a hero inspired by heroic tales. And though many of his ventures were fantastical and fantasy, he could not do it alone. He needed a companion. And for those of us who are familiar with the story, it is the constant dialogue between these two characters. And we see that theme brought forth in many of our modern day movies and stories. The hero always has a companion. And it's the interchange of ideas, the companionship, which is as much responsible for the hero overcoming their challenges. So it's the teamwork, it's the open communication, it's the discourse, the discussion, the give and take, which really is the key to helping someone out of difficult problems. And as was pointed out, not so much what we can teach them, but through our interchange of ideas, discovering what might be the path of the ideas. And any other thoughts on that idea, Theosophy Hall?
Well, we want to agree with the statement that you wouldn't pull out the secret doctrine for somebody who's in the midst of a crisis. And I mean, it can certainly backfire if one tries to bring up these ideas, but just listening and trying to frame in very simplistic terms those ideas that may help. And, not just, oh, well, it's your karma. That really doesn't do anything. That just makes, if people don't believe in karma, that just would make them more upset. So we have to pick the right place and the right time, the right place that this for this person to start discussing these ideas.
So while listening to that contribution, it reminds us of the opening chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And although it takes place on the middle of the battlefield with two opposing armies, where the arrows start flying back and forth, the discourse, the communication, the interchange, the Upanishad between the holy Krishna and Arjuna does not take place in the midst of the struggle. It takes place, we might say, in the calm before the storm, or the calm, the quiet, when the individual has sat down and really faced their struggle for the first time. So, and it is this point that Arjuna and Krishna begin their dialogue, question and answer. And then at the very end, Arjuna is encouraged to do the best that seems right to them, to him. And so the battle is enjoined. And so there's a lesson in that for us, that the right time when the person's asking for help, and not necessarily in the middle of the fight, that's the time to begin sharing these ideas, not all at once, but through the process of listening. What do they think the problem is and the cause of it? And recognition, as was pointed out in our talk, that our problems are very much related to the way we think and feel and react, the causes we've set up. And being the hero is recognizing that and start to marshal our own inner weapons, our desire, our will, our power to think, our power to choose and discern. We all have those. And further, yes, more questions? Theosophy Hall.
Well, it's we picked up on the idea that these ideas are inherent in us, and that it's a comfort to know that, because if we know that it's in us, even if we're having a problem, like the person who's going through addiction, any kind of a psychiatric issue. If we know that we can harness these ideas to help us move along, but it's knowing at the same time that there are obstacles in our way to prevent us from accessing them, and that is the brunt of, we think, of the title of this talk, is how do we get rid of those distractions so that the light of the higher self can come through.
So be the hero of your own life, not just for your purpose, but as was brought out in the talk, in order to take that accomplishment and help others. But even having been the hero of your own life and being ready to help others, the other individual still has to make the effort for their own, make the effort on their own. And as was pointed out, there are obstacles, and we each have to overcome those. We are given the tools, and some of the tools mentioned to are just knowledge of the basic principles, the basis of our inherent unity and connection with that which is divine and eternal in our own nature, an understanding of the doctrine of cycles, of the days and nights, the light and darkness of our experiences, that these come and go. And they present their own periods of opportunity, of growth, rest, assimilation. And also the doctrine of cause and effect, of karma, the very process of evolution, of unfoldment, of making the effort, of seeing evolution all around us in nature. These are basic ideas, and they actually do form the fundamental foundations of the secret doctrine, but they're also self-proving. And so we should be able to find in our life evidence of that and help another individual find evidence of that if they're ready, if they're opening, inquiring, and willing to make the effort. So any other questions or comments, contributions along this line? The Austin Hall.
Should we congratulate ourselves if we attain a certain level of development? Should we rest on our laurels, as it were?
Should we congratulate ourselves and rest on our laurels? Well, there is a certain contentment and joy and relief and prize from overcoming a difficult situation in our lives. It is the recognition of the justice of cause and effect, the peace that comes from restoring harmony in our own nature. It is an effect of the effort we've made. But to rest on our accomplishments, well, nowhere in nature is there continuous rest. There are periods of what seem to be inactivity and rest, but it's all part of a greater cyclic of movement, awakening and a resting, or a birth and a death. And so having accomplished one area of development, our karmic debt from the past, our karmic storehouse of achievements or mistakes in the past will bring forth new opportunities for further growth. So in times of peace, it is said, prepare for war. But don't assume the fight is over, that there's always work. And if one does seem to have reached a point in their lives where they have enjoyed some amount of success, be aware of those around you who are not at that point, who suffer, who are overwhelmed. And we think you'll find that it's hard to stay in. If you have any sense of compassion and justice and brotherhood, it's going to be hard to stay content with your own personal achievement. You'll want to move to help others, recognizing that their success, their failure, their sufferings, their pains, their joys are very much part of your own and your own journey. So
there's a chat.
We have a chat. Thank you. So we see... chat here. True heroism is, oh, this is a quote. True heroism is remarkably sober, very undramatic. It's not the urge to surpass all others at whatever cost, but to urge to serve others at whatever cost. Very interesting from a person who we might say was a hero. In the tennis world, and not only a victor in terms of his ability to excel, but also a hero in the role model he set for many others, aspiring not just in the tennis world, but in life as well. So, and then we have a quote, another quote, John Leguizamo. A real hero saves everyone, not just themselves. True, but in order to save everyone, they have to go on a journey of self-discovery, of facing the challenges, of attaining enlightenment. And then they return from their journey. And with that, having made that journey, now they are ready to help others. Yes. Any other contributions? Yes, for Paul.
So it sounds like being a hero involves what we often hear in these rooms, self-induced and self-devised methods. No one can tell us how to accomplish the goal, but we have to have that, we have to induce ourselves. So in a sense, it's behind will stands desire. We have to have that desire to really make a difference in this world and to overcome the many objections we get from others, sometimes the closest of our companions or family can be not intentionally, but they can sabotage in a sense. If we let them, they can actually sabotage our efforts.
Well, it's interesting that this comment follows up our previous comments along the line of how do we help somebody who doesn't seem to be ready to make that effort? But that's part of the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell, who made a study of along the lines of the literature of different nations and races and the mythological transitions, sees in the hero's journey a story of every one of us. And he points out that in the very beginning of the hero's journey, and we see this even reflected in the Bhagavad Gita, it begins in a situation where the hero is very much in a comfortable situation. And when the first call to be something more, to step out of their comfort, is met, they reject it, they refuse it, they don't want to take it, they run away from it. Even Arjuna sank down in the chariot and refused to fight. And then comes a point. Either with the help of a mentor or being compelled to react and fight because of conditions of their life, and the Bhagavad Gita speaks of this too, they have to choose to go on the journey, and it's reluctant at the beginning. But they have to make that choice, that self-induced and self-devised effort to get themselves out of it. And of course, they face their trials and difficulties. So yes, the hero, who is the hero? Who is the hero in the theosophical understanding of it? Well, when we read our stories of literature, it seems to be a great person, someone who has the capacity for greatness, but may not realize it until they're tested. Till the obstacles come. But from the theosophical perspective, the real hero is that which is heroic throughout lifetimes, who struggles in each life to raise up the beings and the life and the consciousness of those around him, to free them from illusion and delusion and the influences of form and matter. And on their own hand, at the same time, to raise their own consciousness and awareness to the unity of all, to the divine within all. That is not the personality. That is our individuality, ourselves as enduring mind beings at one in essence with that divine source, and therefore we are immortal thinkers, pilgrims, heroes, if you wish, throughout a long series of experiences and personalities and incarnations. And it is the incarnation, it is the presence of that immortal ego, that immortal thinker waking up in our everyday consciousness that gives us the power to choose, to reflect, to make self-induced and self-devised effort. So the real hero is that immortal thinker whose innate capacity is to be a chooser, a discriminator, a witness, and so forth. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
Well, based on what was just said, because we were wondering about children, is there something that we can do to instill this idea of being a hero in a child? And talking about self-induced and self-devised means, well, with a child, of course, depending upon their age, we can teach them, like, they have to take responsibility for their own actions, compassion, choice. So there, we think that depending on the age of the child, we can start at a young age to teach them about, you know, not letting other people, you know, take advantage of them, but to, you know, but not beat them up so that they can, you know, so they can, you know, take charge of themselves. But we think that there could be many ways that we could start a child, especially once they start getting into school and they have all these obstacles in their, you know, having to deal with other children and authority figures. So it's just kind of interesting knowing this, that we can take it back to the child.
Well, in general, the principles of helping a child are not too much different from helping an adult. Of course, the experience is different, the intelligence is different, but as adults, we all need to read the right literature, to have the right companions, those that work with us to bring us up rather than drag us down. So we can certainly present to our children models in literature, stories if we want to read them, books, sources of art that bring out, inspire the various highest feelings in their psychic, emotional natures. We can certainly be examples. And just as it was pointed out, the Mahatmas are not above us, but they're ahead of us. And they stand to us as ideals and facts to which we can aspire. We have to look at children as ourselves, as old souls, although we're just a little bit ahead of them in this particular life in terms of experience. But they're old souls in their lives, in their experience as well. And so what we have to do is be as best we can consistent examples of what we're preaching or what we're teaching, to be a role model, something that they can look up to and aspire, just as we have when we study theosophy and the wisdom traditions of the world. We have examples before us of human beings, whatever names we give them, whatever the stories, but stands before us as ideals and facts of the perfectibility of our nature and the possibility of achieving it in spite of the difficulties. Questions, comments? The Oscar.
Go ahead. Just in line with that thought, I was thinking about how earlier it was mentioned that these ideas are sort of already in us. And so talking about children in that way, I was just thinking that in some sense, it may be actually easier to present these ideas to children, because I think with adults, you know, through life experience, which can be a gift, there's also a lot of, you know, ideas that are instilled into us that we learn over time that can be harder to get rid of or a change later in adulthood. I don't know. That's just what I was thinking about that.
Yes, we think that's a very good and fair observation that as young adults and adults, we begin to manufacture through our thought and through the influence of peers and others our own attitudes towards things. And with continued repetition, these become habits of thoughts, inner obstacles, inner chains, which make it more difficult for us. And it's great if someone realizes at some point in their life that they're there, but it's better to learn that sooner rather than later when those habits aren't as strong and as ingrained. But yes, children are not blank slates. They're innocent of certain experiences in this life. But they're not blank slates. They come in with a sense of inherent idea of justice, of fairness, even a sense of devotion to the parent, a sense of unity and brotherhood and connected with other human beings, a sense of empathy for the lower forms of life in the animal kingdoms, and a sense of wonder. And nature, a sense of curiosity, of wanting to know and ask questions, all those things. So we can work with that. And of course, part of the education is involved in presenting these ideas to young minds. And we do have some very good references of that literature from our theosophy school, and also books such as For Children That Ask Why, the Eternal Verities text for children. So recognizing that young minds don't have those fetters yet, we can work very well in presenting these ideas, not in an authoritarian way, not drilling it into them, but exploring it together, discovering it together, whether it's in nature or in stories or day-to-day experiences. Any other contributions or questions? Yes, you ask me.
Well, throughout this class today, we keep thinking about Viktor Frankl and his book, Man's Search for Meaning, and how in he was in a concentration camp, and he talked about how he was able to keep his mind active and not get so depressed, not to give up. And he tried to give these ideas out to some of his fellow prisoners. So he is such an example, at least to us, as to how one's mind can be activated to surpass any kind of trial that we may have.
Yes, the search for meaning. And yes, he certainly made observations in his own life, but he learned from his fellow prisoners. He watched them and he saw what was the common thread in their lives that helped them survive, more likely to survive than others. And he identified that an individual has to find purpose in their lives. And we acknowledge that among, if you have a room full of human beings, there could be a room full of different opinions about what their purpose is. But can we, through theosophy, identify a common purpose of our lives as souls? And so, regardless of where we are as a human soul, in what condition, in what nation, in what time, in what circumstance, good or bad, pleasure or painful, there are certain things about ourselves as souls and a journey and our nature and our destination that will always give us purpose. And that purpose is a path towards spiritual knowledge. Can we find spiritual knowledge in suffering, in the worst conditions, experiences? We think that we can. We think that we can find the spiritual knowledge that regardless of the external circumstances, there is something in us which is changeless, constant, enduring. And just the lesson that we are changeless and enduring in spite of all the changes that are horrific around us is a tremendous achievement and purpose. We can have the purpose wherever we are, even in the midst of suffering, of serving another human being, of taking the opportunity to be a healer and to transform our suffering and misery into a force for good. That's a great purpose. And the other thing is that wherever we are, our purpose can be to live in accordance with divine law. And that law is always moving wherever harmony and justice and compassion are disturbed through the actions of an individual or groups of individuals to work with that divine law to restore the harmony, to restore the justice, to become a co-worker with nature. So, whatever condition we're in of suffering caused by misery, we are and experience misery, we can always work and find it our purpose to restore it. And that's where the hero becomes really a potent force, a force for good. And of course, we have all the Arthurian legends about that, the heroic tales of the knights, and to work not just for our fellow human beings, but to work with nature to see our higher purpose. So these are all common purposes we can interpret in our own way to add meaning and purpose in our life in whatever condition we're in.
There's a chat.
Sure. Are comic book heroes making us passive? Generations of children waiting for Superman. Well, it's interesting that the Superman comic was developed by immigrants who came from a time of persecution in Europe. And it's interesting that the Superman, what is he? He's an immigrant from another planet coming to the world to help. And so the original purpose of Superman was to inspire us in the very difficult times in which came out, the times of conflict in the world and the rise of certain types of persecutory ideas and dominance and certainly financial crisis, for us to realize that we can be a hero in our own lives, wherever we come from. So, yes, the original impulse was to instill in children and to the adults that would read them that ideal of being the hero of helping others. Now, we can become passive in any kind of reading if we just read it to absorb it for entertainment or to be able to say, oh, I've read this or that. But the true active part of reading is to make whatever book you're reading, comic or otherwise, to get all the juice of the wisdom out of it. Because we can find wisdom everywhere in the arts, in the literature, if we're truly looking for it and trying to extract it, not only for our own benefit, but for the benefit for other people. That's why we say the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, but belongs to each and all. We learn of this ancient eternal wisdom, but we also recognize it, that it's to be found everywhere. It's to be found in the very person who seems to be a difficult challenge for us at this time. Sometimes we can learn from people who tend to be our biggest obstacles. And we know that all those heroes in those comic books had their arch villain or their nemesis who presented the opportunity for them to exert their powers, to be the hero. So we do need confrontation. We do need difficulties. We do need struggles. We've created those struggles. Nobody's imposing them. We've created those struggles. But through those difficulties, we get to become and exert those heroic powers which are already within us. Chat, does teaching self-reliance bring out the hero in everyone? Yes, we think that's one of the ideas referred to in our talk this morning, that being a hero is learning to rely on your own qualities, your own powers of thought, of feeling, not to look outside oneself for one's savior or hero, not to look outside oneself for one's own authority, but to look within for one and to rely on ourselves. And the very interesting balance is, as brought out before, is it doesn't just stop there, looking within and being self-reliant. If we're all one, from one source, there are plenty of individuals we come in contact in life who can help us along the way. So it's not just self-reliance, but interdependence, the willingness to rely on ourselves to help others, but also to learn and listen and grow from the experience of other people. So we thought we'd close on this idea, that the final prize, the final realization of the hero's journey from a theosophical perspective is to realize our own divine nature, to be one with it in our thought and our feeling and our action, to realize that others have done it before. We call them, give them various names, that we can do it, and that every thinking, feeling, sentient being has that potential possibility, because they also are one with nature. And to realize that we are here for a reason, to assist in that process of awakening all to that divine potentiality. So at this point, we thank you, and we'll continue on our next meeting Wednesday evening on the subject of dreams and apparitions. And of course, next Sunday with the idea of blending mind and soul. Our meeting is adjourned.
Bye, everybody.